Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5, and welcome, of course, to 2025. We've had a great year. Happy that you've been with us all year, and we're looking forward to another one.
Heck yeah.
Heck yes. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast that is not just for car people. So buckle up. I feel like that is such a cliche saying. How many other automotive podcasts and TV shows in the past have said, buckle up and
buckle
hang
on
for the ride?
Let's get right into it.
Yeah, we're not going to use that one again. Sorry. Okay. The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, and the Illinois Attorney General have levied the largest penalty against a car dealer to date. This past week, this is courtesy of NAIDA.com. They are asking for a whopping $20 million.
Oh.
Which I feel like is a real penalty. We covered another issue with a dealer being shady, allegedly, and having to pay, I believe, is $1 million fine for being kind of racist, basically.
Yes.
But, man, dealers.
$20 million. That is a lot. I mean, I guess we don't know how much what their revenue is for a year, but still, that is a ton of cash.
Well, it's a large automotive group as well. They operate Honda dealers, Hyundai dealers, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram dealers, Subaru dealer, Volvo dealer, Mercedes, Porsche, Volkswagen. So in the grand scheme of things, it looks like it's probably about $1 million per dealer, which shouldn't bankrupt them, but that's not a small amount.
No, but I will say, even though the last time we talked about this, it was a smaller amount, and this could end up being on the whole a smaller amount maybe than we imagine just hearing $20 million. I'm still so happy to hear and be able to talk about the feds coming after this crap, because
heck,
it's
yes,
ugh, it's a scourge on the industry, and I like it when the government works.
So here's what happened. The gist of the complaint is pretty much what we expect car dealers to do all the time, is lie. They charge for add-ons without consent. Again, all of this is alleged. This is based on the complaint from the FTC against this car dealer. They added unnecessary fees. Well, what car dealer doesn't?
Yeah,
they
seriously
posted fake reviews.
Whoa.
And they also did not disclose some vehicles were imported from Canada.
Could that be illegal? I guess if
the
it was sold here?
The reason why that matters, so North American spec cars, it doesn't matter as much as you would think.
Okay.
North American spec cars are basically all the same. There's no difference between a car that gets shipped to the Canadian market and gets shipped to the U.S. market. There are very slight variations and differences between their safety rules and regulations. So Canadian vehicles have to have daytime running lights, which is just a software activation thing. We have a slight difference in crash test regulations for impact bumpers. It's like 5 miles an hour versus 10 miles an hour. But North American cars are just all made the same. It's not like they're putting a 5 mile an hour bumper on Canadian cars and 10 mile an hour one on our cars. So typically you can buy a car from Canada and just get a letter of compliance from the manufacturer, boom, done. And, you know, speedo, you got to change out from kilometers to freedom units. But other than that, no big difference. Except the reason why it matters, warranty. Warranty
Ooh.
Does not always transfer from North America, from North, yeah, North of America to America, from Canada to America and vice versa. So that is the deception there. The fake reviews thing is awesome as well. I think that's hilarious. Dealers do this all the time. Let's be honest. Come on. You look at any business's reviews and you go, oh, gee, those look like they were AI or just, you know, not an actual customer. Frickin', I mean, like, look at Amazon.
Yeah.
The Amazon's Choice stuff. Man, there's so much alleged manipulation with reviews on general products that I get solicitation emails every week for companies wanting to help me remove bad reviews. And I'm like, that's not, they're there. They're real.
I don't want to remove those.
I mean, honestly, most of them I enjoy responding to, because I can be super snarky, because a lot of them are not legitimate in that we were bad at our job. It's just somebody didn't like what we said to them or something like that. But anyway, this is crazy, though, because, all right, so this company, Leader Automotive Group, is getting, well, they are leading now in the amount of fines, but they're getting fined for posting fake reviews. But we found a competitor of ours that appears to be doing the exact same thing. And it was a high-end car dealership called Autobarn out of Noonan, Georgia. And somebody in on their Yelp page, which Yelp is making a comeback of all things,
seriously,
posted and said, hey, they're essentially like all their five-star reviews or most of their five-star reviews are fake because the owner of the dealership went on social media and was soliciting five-star reviews from influencers in exchange for a follow on social media.
Oh,
and he posted a screenshot of this guy's story from Autobarn. And I looked into it, and it seems plausible. Here's why. They have 1,400 Google reviews, which is a lot for a car dealer. We have about 100.
I said, does that mean they've sold 1,400 cars?
Yeah. 4.4 stars, but on cars.com, they have a 2.9 star average. On Yelp, they have a 1.6 star average.
Whoa.
So if you look down deep in their Google reviews, there are a disproportionate number of five-star feedback that don't have any reviews, just a ton. And they're all in this certain period where this one reviewer claimed that the owner of Autobarn was soliciting essentially fake reviews. So it is odd how many five-star non-reviews are in that 1,400. So, and when you read the bad reviews, it's really, really bad. There are some good ones too, but
well, I'm just scrolling through now, and it's like there's a bunch of five stars and then a bunch of ones. Like, there's not much in between. It's either this was amazing or literally the worst experience.
Right, right. And it's always a matter of what comprises the one-star reviews. Like, yes. What happened, right? If you read our one-star reviews, it's kind of like, well, people were just being cranky because they didn't like the price we quoted them or something like that. And that's the case a lot of times with dealers. But in the case of Autobarn, according to the people leaving one-star reviews, it's pretty shady practices. A lot of misrepresentation.
They also misrepresent their lobby furniture, apparently. This review I'm looking at says, friendly staff, but the lobby furniture was broken, and the vehicle I went to view had extensive damage.
Oh, boy. Well, it's good to know, and I say this because, so we've called out, both on the podcast and on my social media and just in general, we've called out a lot of what I believe is not worthy competition. And in doing so, we have been criticized for essentially not staying in our own lane, right? Somebody's told me, well, there's this unwritten rule in the car business that you don't narc, you don't talk about when another dealer is being
snitches
unethical.
Get stitches.
There's just general car dealers being car dealers, but then there's like really crappy practices, and it's difficult. Number one, I didn't sign that agreement, right? Like, I don't know. Nobody told me that. That wasn't in the dealer agreement. But there's a reason, right? I'm all about good competition. But when you have other dealers completely misrepresenting cars and covering up histories in order to exist on the same playing field, and we're selling great cars and they're not, but according to them, they are just as good. It's frustrating. So yeah, I'm going to call them out. And in this article about Leader Automotive Group, the FTC was quoted as saying this, and this is what I like about this. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of government, but they do have their place when it comes to regulation. They said, quote, working closely with the Illinois Attorney General, we are holding these dealerships accountable for unlawfully extracting millions of dollars from consumers through a textbook bait and switch scheme and bolstering their poor reputation with fake reviews. We will continue our work to ensure that consumers are not being overcharged for cars and that honest dealers do not need to compete with firms that cheat.
Yay! Let's go!
Yay, government! Now, where does that $20 million go? Who knows? They say it's going to provide relief to customers, but...
Well, and what's also interesting is I found an article here from Motor Biscuit, which I believe we've called out before. This is from
August.
Are
they profitable yet?
Are
they getting into the motor gravy?
Ooh. Or is it? Yeah, for their sake, I hope so. Maybe all these call outs from it's going to send all the Switchcast viewers to Motor Biscuit.
There we go.
Get them some ad revenue if they even have ads.
Is that like a good breakfast read?
Yeah. So this article says that back around in August of 2024, they posted in Q2 a massive loss due to inventory impairment, and they're going to close all the U.S. locations, or they were at least threatening to.
This is the same dealership.
Leader Automotive Group.
We're talking about. Okay.
And it said, like, their parent company, like Auto Canada, is going to be, like, ceasing mergers and acquisitions and all this other stuff. So things were not good a couple months ago. They're probably even worse now.
Even less, yes. Even less good.
They still seem to be up. Like, all the websites are up. The dealerships seem to still exist, so I don't really know what's going on, but I thought that was interesting a couple months ago. They were threatening to close everything anyway, so this might just accelerate that.
I thought it was interesting that a lot of them are in normal Illinois, in contrast to the Reed Autos scam dealership from last week, which was in peculiar Minnesota, Missouri. Yeah, that.
One of those.
Went from peculiar to normal. That's just a random anecdote. But anyway, just so you know, there is hope out there if you're frustrated with dealers for pulling bait and switch type stuff or charging $1,000 dock fees and any number of other fees that you don't even know what they are. Well, the FTC is on the case. And apparently just recently they also filed charges against two other dealers, one in Maryland, I think one in Georgia. So they are cracking down, and maybe they'll take a look at the fake reviews on this Autobarn as well.
You know, while you're in there. It's one of those while you're in there.
Interesting. Well, speaking of interesting negotiation practices, bait and switch or whatever, we see a lot of that on Marketplace as well. And that brings us to our shrewd negotiator. I found this one in the Porsche 911 buy and sell group. Here we go. This is the description. Original 2008 Boxster RS60 Spider. This is an extreme rare car, being a black interior and the Tiptronic transmission.
Oh.
3.4 liter flat six boxer engine. Do your research, please. This is not a regular Boxster S. Basically a 911 in a Boxster body and produced in very limited edition.
Ah.
Clean title, turbo wheel, super good tires, brakes, spelled wrong, of course, brakes, etc., all good, recently serviced. This is a good investment.
Ah, there it is.
Yes.
Oof, probably not.
Yeah. Except he didn't do his research, despite him telling other people to do so, because originally he had it listed as a 3.3 liter a PDK transmission, which they didn't make until 2009. Very condescending right out the gate, telling people that it's basically a 911 in a Boxster body, which it's it's basically a Boxster with an updated trim level.
Yeah.
Like, and some badging.
Gosh.
Yeesh. Oh, man. People trying real hard to make a Tiptronic, an automatic Porsche Boxster, seem rare and special, but wide of the mark.
It's about everybody at the PCA car shows anyway, so. Yeah.
They're becoming Corvette people.
they very much are.
Anyway, he had to throw in the good investment thing, too. I checked with my investment advisor. He had not heard of a Porsche Boxster mutual fund.
I think you need to get a different investment advisor, Doug. He's not up on the times.
I was trying to do my research. That's what he said to do.
Tisk, tisk. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
In the past, we've done, from a car dealer's perspective, things you should ask a car salesman and things you shouldn't. Somewhat for humor, but also like, hey, how do you actually get to the bottom of what you want to know? Well, there's an Xer, which is a social media platform. Not a Gen Xer, but
a Twitter user.
TikToker. Twitter. It's like a speaker. Anyway, Matt Brayman Tinsel.
Nice.
Yeah, good Christmassy name. Anyway, he posts, I'm going to buy a car today. Give me your best tips for messing with car salesmen. And this went so well that I thought we'd unpack some of them on the podcast, partially for entertainment value and also to see if any of them are legitimate. Now, I expected this to go one way in terms of, like, what are the crazy things you could do? Like, walk in wearing a Santa hat and New Balances and a shirt that says, you know, my Corvette is rare or something like that. Like, how do you just confuse the heck out of them, not actually mess with them? And then some people took it a whole different level as well. So we'll unpack them. But I think the funniest thing, my immediate response was, I see this post and it says, I'm going to buy a car today. And on all the car dealer, car salesman groups, they make fun of so badly the people who walk in, typically boomers, who just walk into a showroom and announce, I'm buying a car today. Who wants to sell me a car? And seasoned salesmen run. So number one tip to Matt, don't walk into the dealership and say that, or do if you want to mess with them. If you want to get the worst green pea salesman, just walk into a dealer and say, who wants to sell me a car?
I just feel like that is such an attitude of, like, and we saw this in the comments, like, you've got to work for this, or, like, you know what, like, I don't know, just thinking that they are God's gift to that dealership for buying a car that day, when it's like, bro, you're just another number. Get your car and get out.
Yep. Like, yep. Ugh. It's very true. It's very true. So Tyler, take it away. What are some of the good ones, the confusing ones, the crazy ones?
So there was a lot of good stuff. There was a lot of, like, people attempting normal advice, which is weird, but I love the...
There's a lot of bad advice, for
yes.
sure.
I love the frequently walk away from the sales desk and make them find you in odd places around the dealership. That I like a lot. Because it's like, just, I don't know, just walk away. And then they find you, like, in between the vending machines or something. Like, I don't know.
See, that's what I was hoping the entire thread would be.
Yes.
Is, like, people being creative of just, like, you know, go take a nap in the trunk yes, of a car.
Yes. There's another one that's like, ask how much the catalytic converter goes for and if it's easily accessible. I kind of like yes. that. Or insist on pricing all the documents in euros, which I like just like, whoop. So I don't know. There's some good stuff.
That's pretty good. How do you do that with a straight face, though?
Would be the hardest part.
I saw this one. This was one of my favorite ones. On test drives, they have to listen to all of your cool theories. Explain the intricacies of interdimensional Bigfoot or the multiple Bidens theory while accelerating into heavy traffic.
That's so good. Somebody also said, tell them you won't buy the car without throwing in some random $45 accessory you like. He said this person said they did it with their truck and it had the whole dealership involved trying to get the deal done. And it was like just over such a minute little thing.
Something they had to order off of Amazon or something like that.
Yeah. And it's like, this is not happening unless I can get this today.
There was a lot of people saying, well, skip the whole thing and just buy a Tesla.
Ugh,
have to negotiate.
So there was so much Tesla fanboyism in this thread, which are on X / Twitter, whatever, which it's to be expected, I guess, being that it is his platform. But I will say you buy a car at this price, there's no haggling, there's no business. It's just you want the product. I kind of like that Tesla has started to normalize that.
Right.
For like new cars. Like obviously the type of stuff that you sell, you can't go on to some website and say, I want a 997 GT3, just send it to me. It's not how that works. But for new cars, just get all this crap out of the way.
It takes the antagonism out of it. So let's look at some of the more like the bad advice ones in terms of the antagonistic negotiation. So one of them I saw, it said there's three separate negotiations, which there really shouldn't be, but let's be honest, there is. One, negotiate vehicle price. Two, negotiate warranty. Then three, negotiate finance. They get harder as you go, although warranty is part of finance. So that's, it's one and three, but you would negotiate your trade. There's a lot of things to negotiate in this car buying process. He said, be firm but reasonable, or skip all that and buy a Tesla.
Well, and like, there was a lot of people, one I noted specifically, that really said you need to prepare to leave after hours of negotiation. And like, I don't understand how other people value their time. That is a very personal thing, I think. But I think they need to reanalyze their lives, because how much could you possibly save on a new car to make wasting hours of your life worth it? Yeah, you can tell your neighbor that, wow, you really ran the salesman over the coals, or which you probably didn't.
Nobody ever does.
No.
The house always wins. Somebody posted somewhere in here, essentially, like, dealers are very good at making you think that they lost in negotiations, but they never do. They never do. They'll always get you one way or another. One guy said, if you actually want to buy a car, then straight away offer the salesman person commitment to buy at X price. Wait until that price is achieved. That's good in theory. Salespeople want a commitment. But if you just pull a price out of your butt, then it doesn't matter. Like, your offer has to be informed. It has to come from somewhere.
Well, and I love the people, we've brought this up on the podcast before, where they're like, you know, the guys that'll rock into the dealership be like, I know what invoice was. One person said, bring me the manufacturer's invoice. I'll pay $500 over that in cash, but only if you hurry. Like that, like antagonistic, like the salesmen are against you. Like, I mean, some dealers, they probably are, let's be honest.
Oh, sure.
But like, why do you got to go in with a hot head like that? The dealership does need to make money. It is a business.
This is on the heels of what we just talked about, which is the FTC fining a dealer $20 million for essentially bad negotiations, unethical negotiations. That's what it came down to. Bait and switch, hidden fees, et cetera, et cetera. So I understand that this is the feedback that comes on a public social media platform. This is the way people think it has to be. But it takes two to tango. Either the dealer or the customer could decide, I'm not playing this game, and just stop playing the game, and it would be done with, right?
Yeah. Here's another person saying, here's my estimate of MSRP plus freight. I'll give you $1,000 profit on top of that, and I brought my checkbook to buy it for that amount.
I guarantee you, based on his attitude, he means invoice.
Yes.
Nobody's going in saying, I'm going to give you a grand over sticker, because the dealer would be like, yeah, okay, sure.
Free profit.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And like you estimating invoice, like that's stupid. Yeah. I don't go into McDonald's and say, here's my estimate of your supply chain costs on these fries.
What's the invoice on that quarter pounder, bro? I'll give you 50 cents on top of that.
You don't want to know how little it costs them.
Someone said, when you're ready to buy the car you want, tell them you have exactly 30 minutes to close the deal. And if it cannot be completed by then, you have to leave and will purchase a vehicle elsewhere. That seems really antagonistic. But like, is that even possible?
I mean, you can just say that and say, this is how long I have to make a deal. I don't think there's anything wrong with putting a timeline on it. Like, if your offer makes sense, or like just say this either works or it doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't mind that tactic. It's a lot better than there was a couple others where they basically said, I think there was one that said, go in, test drive the vehicle, and then take it to another dealer on your test drive and try to get them to beat the deal. And I'm like, that's dishonest negotiations, because the original dealer would probably also like that chance as well.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you go down the street and they beat your deal by $5, you screwed over the original dealer.
Well, and that's just that antagonistic nature where it seems like a lot of these folks just think that the salesmen are, you know, lesser than human, and they just need to like beat them up to save $1,000 on a $35,000 purchase. Like, that's the other thing that like blows my mind is the percentage of the overall money you are spending anyway to go through all of this headache and stress and go through all these hoops. Like, just buy the car. Right.
If you want to pit dealers against each other, that's fine. But do it honestly and do it via email. Just go to their internet sales department and say, this is what I'm doing. Best price, including all the fees, best transparent out the door price wins. And like, don't play these stupid games and be dishonest in your negotiations. Like one guy said, oh, go in and like say you're going to finance it and you'll take the longest term financing and stuff like that and then pay it off 2 days later. You're screwing over the dealer because they get charged back that finance contract. Yeah. So
What about this one I found that said, I found the car I wanted on one of the online sites in a cheaper market, screenshotted it, cut out the location, and managed to negotiate a price match. That feels dishonest, but like kind of next level. They're living like 5 years in the future with that.
I guess so. I mean, if the dealer goes for it, if they're willing to match it, fine. You know,
because at least
the dealer should say, well, where is this? What are you paying for shipping? Like a good salesman would unpack the price match and say, what am I really matching? Is it the same trim level? What are their fees? What's the out-the-door price? What is it going to cost you to get it here? Yes. So if the salesman matched the price without asking those questions, that's on the salesperson, I think.
Did you? I saw one. You go ahead. Nope. I've talked a lot.
This is a good one. Leave your wife, quote unquote, at home and call her for counter offers just like they go to consult their manager.
Yes. There was one I saved that said essentially get all the way to the end when you're about to sign the final paperwork and say, ooh, I should talk to my wife.
Well, people do that all the time anyway. We get the wife excuse all the time. Back to the Tesla fanboys. He says, to the uninitiated, Tesla, best cars, safest, fastest, cheapest to own, and best tech by far. Oh, and best audio, effing best everything. This dude is missing something in the cheapest to own, because there's this wonderful article from IC Cars that said used car prices stabilized as used EV prices continue to fall. And we've seen other articles like that. EVs might be low maintenance. You don't have to do oil changes and stuff like that, but you have to consider depreciation in your cost of ownership. And EVs are statistically the most expensive cars to own for the last few years.
Well, I think
by far.
The folks forget, and now hopefully this is a small percentage of cars, or maybe further down the road when maybe more maintenance would be expected, like a larger maintenance bill for a typical ICE car. Yes, there are less things to maintain and things to do. When something goes wrong, though, it is astronomically more expensive, because it's not like, oh, you just need to like change your timing belt, or like, I don't know, you know, re-oil your AC compressor or something. I don't know. EVs still have AC compressors. If a motor goes out, it's like so expensive. God, like I just,
yes.
People always forget that. Yeah, will it last 100,000 miles without a motor replacement?
I think that's just modern cars in general, though. Becoming more replace versus repair, and stuff is getting more expensive because there's more software. But anyway, let's move on to one of our favorite games, new games. This is the Guess the Car that goes with the license plate.
Yes.
How good are we at figuring out stereotypes? So I'll say a vanity plate that I've seen, and Tyler has to try to guess what car it is, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I've got to look at mine because I have the plate and I forgot what car it is.
Don't look at my screen, Doug. No cheating.
Right. All right. Let's start with,
how many do you
this
have?
This should be easy. I have four.
Oh, I only have two.
Okay. Charge me.
That is Prius?
No. Come on, Prius is a hybrid.
I didn't know. That's too. Is that a Tesla?
It's a Tesla. Oh, yes.
I thought that was too
people that
obvious.
Own Teslas with their vanity plates are like vegans and CrossFitters. Right? They can't wait to tell you about the fact that they don't have to put gas in their car.
All of their vanity plates suck, but they're all about that. I thought that was too obvious. I was trying to.
Yeah.
I overthought it.
From the same listener, Family Cruisin', these are his two cars. His other one, the plate is Don't Pet.
Don't Pet. What is that, on a Hellcat?
Yes!
Yeah!
Hey!
I have redeemed myself.
Good job. All right, what do you got for me?
I have, and these are two that I saw in person, actually, and okay. I was excited to tell. So these are like Ohio plates. Angel 69 with a glittery plate frame.
Oh, I feel like that is a Ford Escape.
Close. It is like a mid-2010s Jeep Cherokee.
Ooh.
So, like, kind of the same, like, mid-size, like, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Did it have lots of pink trim on it and ducks all the way across?
No, but I guarantee you ducks were on the inside. This was at night, so I didn't see the, like, the dashboard.
Okay. How about this one? Her Mess. That's a submission by a listener, Jason Adkins.
Like a big old, like, Chevy Suburban.
Mm-mm.
Oh.
No, it is big old. It's a BMW X7.
Okay, but I was, like, in the right space. Like, it's a big SUV for hauling probably one kid around that they think they need. Because I gotta be high up to be safe. What about this? So this is Gelato with a 3 for the E.
Fiat.
No. It is on a Honda Accord.
What?
Like a basic late 2000s Honda Accord with Gelato as the plate frame. I did not understand. Or plate, vanity
that's,
plate.
That's disappointing. That's very disappointing.
That would be sweet on like a 500 Abarth or something.
All right, last one for you. This is from listener Larry Cates. A gift for me.
Oh, Corvette, 100%.
No.
Oh.
No.
Is it
it's
like
a Corvette owner's wife. It is a Cadillac XT6.
Yes, that fits the vibe. Oh, man. This is a fun game. I do. We're pretty all right at this, even if we're just in the general direction without getting the actual cars.
I like it. Keep them coming.
Yes. Doug just gets to read all the ones you send in. I have to find my own, but that's fine.
I find my own, too. This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. All right, tonight we're going to try to answer the age-old question, how much does it really cost to own and or daily drive sports cars? Is it more or less than normal pedestrian vehicles?
It's and more.
Yes. Okay.
It's more.
But can you do it?
Well,
what
yes.
does it really cost? What does it really cost? And to do that, we're taking a sampling, not a sampling, a comprehensive look at 8 cars out of my collection, 7, something like that. Your 4, Tyler, and our friend Dan Doucette, who started this trend, at least in our group, of tracking diligently our miles and cost per miles of all of our cars. He's going to weigh in as well. And we've got a smattering of cars from vintage Fiat to Volvos and Toyota 4Runners, Land Cruisers,
and a purple pace car.
A purple Corvette pace car. I wonder if your Corvette or my Corvette cost more per mile. Let's start out with that.
Well, actually, I don't know. Well, I'll be interested to find out.
We both have Corvette C5s. And both have 98s. Mine's heavily modified. Yours is not so much. And we always say, well, LS1s are bulletproof. Corvette C5s are cheap to own and operate. So I started with 67,800 miles, give or take, ended at 68,100. I depressingly only put 271 miles on my Corvette. And
what did you do with yourself this year?
I don't know. $565 in maintenance, so $2 and change per mile for Corvette. But
nice.
I mean, I probably could have driven another 8,000 miles and spent $0 more. So,
unfortunately, this year, when I bought the car, it was not exactly as described. So I needed to do, well, very typical stuff. Nothing was like wrong, but I changed every fluid. I put a new set of tires on it. I had to fix a bunch of interior bits and bobs. So all of that was a total of $3,000 that I spent after purchasing that car on stuff.
So when you buy a car, sight unseen, from Florida, man.
Yes.
On an auction, shockingly, it's not as described.
Yep.
Gee, who would have thunk?
So that was all right at the right off the rip, and then I put 3,000 miles on it. So my cost per mile is $1 per mile, but I'm sure I could also go another like 8,000 with nothing but oil changes, and it would be fine.
All right. What was your like quote unquote daily driver? What's the one you put the most miles on?
That would be my Volvo V50 wagon.
Okay.
With a stick.
Okay. All right. So, all right. An enthusiast daily driver. Dan, what was your daily driver? What was the most miles you put on a car this year?
My Alfa Giulia.
Alfa Giulia. All right. Ooh, okay. Those are not known for being reliable, so we're going to see how this shakes out. How many miles did you put on your Alfa Giulia?
20,333.
20,000. All right. Well, you've got us beat by a long shot. How many miles in your Volvo?
5,600.
Okay. Mine was my Porsche 997, and I put 6,700 miles on that, mostly in the winter.
I think the difference between my daily and yours is our trip to Amelia from earlier last year.
Probably. Okay, Dan, cost per mile. How much did you spend on maintenance? What it cost you to drive daily drive an Italian Chrysler?
11 cents a mile.
What?
Holy crap.
Most of that was, or a good chunk of it, was new tires and alignment.
Gotcha.
The only car I have that beat you on that, other than the ones that were free because I didn't drive them, my 2000 Ford Excursion with a 7.3, I put 4,200 miles on it. I spent $371, so it cost me 9 cents a mile to drive my Excursion 7.3 diesel.
Nice.
Yes. 11 cents a mile. That's
so low.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's 20,000 miles on it, and it was $2,200. Approximately.
Nice. Okay. All right. So my actual daily driver, I spent $3,800 on it. And I feel like that's probably about like to be expected for a 911 every year. There's a couple things I shouldn't have had to have done. So that maybe skewed it. So maybe $2,500 is like an average. But it cost me 57 cents a mile to daily drive a Porsche 911.
It cost you less per mile to daily a 911 than it took me to daily a Volvo.
Ooh,
so I was at 60 cents a mile on a 14 or 15 year old Volvo with 135-ish thousand miles on it now. So it's getting up there. But I was actually above average on maintenance this year. There were some bigger things I needed to do that I'd been kind of maybe putting off, or thing bigger stuff had just kind of gone. But on average, I'm about $2,500 a year on that car.
Not bad. Not bad. That's a Swedish performance car for you, I guess.
But I love it. It has been dead reliable. I have just kind of I like to try to open checkbook my cars as much as possible because I want to get in that and just go. I don't want to think about it, and I want to use it for as long as possible because I don't know if I'll ever be able to buy a new a manual five-cylinder all-wheel drive station wagon ever again.
Mm-hmm. When I met my wife, she drove a Toyota Corolla, and this whole concept of spending money in maintenance every year was just baffling to her because I said I spent $1,000 or $2,000 a year on my Corvette, and she's like, what?
Like,
I like do an oil change. It's like $80 a year in maintenance. I'm like, yeah, okay, okay. So entering the chat, I decided to keep track of Aaron's daily driver, which is a 2011 Mercedes E350 convertible. We're not going to talk about the wagon. That was a friggin' fortune and we lost our butts on it, but that was a lemon. She put 7,200 miles on her E-Class. We spent $2,200 in maintenance. So it was 31 cents a mile. I feel like that's a nice
mid-road.
Yeah.
For a Mercedes convertible that she loves? Perfect.
All right, let's flip stereotypes, right? Your Alfa, supposed to be expensive, was super cheap. You have a Toyota Land Cruiser.
I do.
Let's talk about that one. How did that go for you?
Not well this year.
The Toyota fanboys.
Finally caught up with me on that. It's approaching 100,000 miles on it since I bought it back in 2017.
Nice.
And most years, it's been in the range of like 3 cents a mile.
Wow. He's really putting off telling us how much he spent on this.
Yeah.
I could tell.
Yeah, because
that's what they call deferred maintenance. kicking the can down the road.
What decided at 273 miles to just, you know, start leaking everywhere.
Nice.
I put about 4,300 miles on it this year, and maintenance cost was around $5,900.
Over the dollar a mile. Is that the first one in our group? $2. Never mind.
The exact number is $1.35 per mile.
Ooh,
boy.
But like you said, that is not indicative.
Yeah,
you amortize it out over your total ownership.
If over my total ownership, this brought it up a little bit, but over since 2017, it's averaged 8 cents a mile.
Gotcha. Now, would you believe I have this is the only one I sold this year, 2006 Aston Martin DB9 stick shift coupe. Let's see. I put 344 miles on it this year and sold it. I spent $0 on maintenance on an Aston Martin. The day I traded it in, no joke, the check engine light came on, started flashing. The car was bucking violently, and it needed, thankfully, just plugs and coils, but that was still, you know, a couple grand. So it cost me zero, but it cost the dealership $2,000, which, spoiler alert, I traded into my dealership.
Technically,
but the title was flipped. It wasn't my car anymore. It counts for the spreadsheet. It cost me $0 to drive an Aston Martin.
Yeah. Well, it cost me $0 to drive my 968 500 miles this year before I sold it with your assistance on Bring a Trailer. But that is fine because it cost me $6,000 last year and like $4,000 the year before that. And I think $3,500 the year before that.
Okay. So which is more expensive, a poor man's Porsche or a 911?
So average over the course of ownership. Now this is a little skewed. I've had my 911 since 2017. And I had the 968 for like essentially 3 years. The 968 over 3 years was $1.30 a mile.
Yeah.
My 911 over 8-ish has been 50 cents a mile. And let me tell you, I don't, because the maintenance cost on the 968 went up every year. It never actually declined. It was great. I did start to get a little nostalgic for it until I put together these numbers and was like, nope, I'm good.
You're had happy with your Corvette.
Yes.
Nice. Nice. Let's see. What else do I got on here? 79 Porsche 911. This one I probably could have done zero maintenance, but I wanted to change the ride height and just have a couple things looked at. And I think we did an oil change, but not bad. 527 miles cost me $843, so $1.60 a mile for a vintage 911. Granted, that probably another 2,000, 3,000 miles, zero maintenance, that would have changed those costs as well. So I'm looking forward to hopefully a cheaper next year.
Well, I can just drive it for you this year, and you can make sure you spend time with your Corvette. Easy peasy.
Yes. All right. So what else, Dan? What do you have? You have an old Mercedes sedan?
I do, and that actually cost quite a bit this year. A bit of it was prep for some events I may have done with it. But
how many miles did you put on your old Mercedes sedan?
3,000 miles.
Okay.
Which is a little bit. That's a little more than I average per year in that car. Maintenance cost was around $4,100.
Ooh.
And that ended up being $1.37 per mile, which is like 2 cents more
than
a Land Cruiser.
And how does that compare then to previous years?
It's that car's all over the board. It's I'd have to sit down and look. It just bounces because a couple of years it's been like almost nothing. Other years it's been like this. It just bounces. So what was your total?
Let's look at. Do you have totals and averages?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What was your average cost per mile over all of your vehicles this year? And what was your total maintenance cost?
Yeah. I'd say just worth mentioning too, since you mentioned your DB9, it cost me $0 to drive the Exige this year.
Oh, that's right. How could we forget Krypton Green Lotus Exige?
Lotus.
$0.
Lots of trouble, usually serious, but apparently not in my case.
But it's a Toyota engine.
Yep.
It didn't cost you zero. I broke your mirror. I just haven't told you yet.
Yeah, well, okay.
Well, you just did.
Never said it's going to be my cost.
That's true. I'm going to have a car on my spreadsheet I don't even own.
And it's worth mentioning with that car, too. I put about 5,000 miles on it, and I'm averaging, during my ownership, overall, around 6 cents a mile.
6 cents a mile for a Lotus Exige.
Nice.
Dan has us all smoked.
Smoked.
Until I start thinking about the Land Cruiser.
No, but in terms of the sports car thing, right? Like, your 911, my 911, your Lotus. Yeah, I mean, Lotus gets a bad rap. I mean, you have defied the odds with your Lotus and your Alpha. That is awesome.
Yeah, that's sweet.
I shouldn't say that. Lotuses in general, yes. Exige and Elise have been bulletproof cars for most people.
They're pretty stellar vehicles in general.
As long as you don't heavily modify them.
And with the Alphas, it's a little bit of roulette when you buy one, but I guess I ended up with a good one.
Yeah, I've heard that too. You either get a lemon or you get a good one.
Hey, it's like 996.
So average cost per mile.
And that was for 2024. I drove a little over 28,000 miles. Average cost per mile, 43 cents.
Not bad.
And that ends up calculating out to a little over 12 grand in maintenance.
That's a lot.
It's
when
a lot
you think
for,
about
it's
it.
A lot
but
for
you
me.
Have
it's,
a
it's,
fleet of
it's
cars.
It's a record for me, but I'm looking at you guys and yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, Tyler, average cost per mile.
So over this year, I averaged 70 cents a mile across all the cars. I spent about $9,000 and drove about 13,000 miles, which is actually a significant decrease from the past 2 years. I think it's because I didn't provide a car for a couple of road trips. Mm. Previous few years, you know, Amelia, Rhode Island, you know, I obviously went to Kentucky with you for the Corvette Caravan, but that was all on the Corvette.
I can't tally total miles because I drive so many other people's cars and dealer cars and stuff like that. So I have 23K on the spreadsheet, but that includes Erin's 7,000 miles on her convertible, and which 1,000 are probably mine, but then I probably have another 10,000 miles in random dealer cars and stuff like that. So my average cost per mile was $2.61.
Whoa!
And my total maintenance cost for the year was $61,635.
Doug, I don't want to kick a man while he's down, but as a part of putting together all this data, I have totaled up the amount of money I've spent since I got my Porsche 911 on all of my cars from 2017 until the yesterday end of 2024. In total, I've spent $56,000 maintaining these cars.
Well, there's one car in here that we haven't talked about that skews these results, and that is a 2001 Lamborghini Diablo. And I put a whopping 4,000 miles on the car this year. Mostly all in 1 week. But I also spent $53,800, making the cost per mile for that car $13.60. However, it was a scheduled major service. The big part of that was the gearbox needed rebuilt, which wasn't my fault. When I bought it, had kind of a crunchy gearbox. But I will say this, for the past 2 years, I've put a couple thousand miles on it as well. and I don't really think it cost me anything, like a couple fluid changes and that's it. So again, I had a crazy big expense on this car this year, but it will amortize itself out because next year really shouldn't cost much at all in theory, but it's an old Lambo. So who knows? But yeah, the first year I got it, I think I spent zero and put like 1500 miles on it. So yeah, it's free. Not this year.
I like doing this though. I feel like it, you know, a lot of people like to hide what they've spent, you know, they don't want to think about it. And honestly, it was a bit sobering. Thinking about these numbers is what made me decide to sell the 968. Cause I was like, look, I got to pull the ripcord. I'm out. But, I think it's good to know what this hobby costs.
Yep. Yep. It surprises people on both ends. Well, with that, let's go to the props and flops of the week.
As always, props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. And Switch Cars, as you know, is the enthusiast dealership where we buy and sell consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio. And Doug, what is the pick of the week from Switch Cars Inventory?
Pick of the week is a 2012 Porsche 911 Carrera 2 PDK Coupe, blue on beige with about 40 some thousand miles on it. And this is a great pick. You heard us talk about how low the ownership cost was to daily drive a 996 and a 997. Well, 997.2 is probably the cheapest in the entire 911 lineup to own, use, and maintain. So this
doesn't have an IMS bearing.
Well, not a ones that break. No bore scoring. Maybe get a little fuel buildup for or carbon buildup from the DFI system. Yeah. But you know, PDK is proven to be pretty darn bulletproof, and you know, change of fluid 120,000 miles, and you just drive these things. They're great. They're great. Let's see, our flop of the week, Jaguar, yet again, their rebrand. This is according to hotcars.com. The title of the article says it all. Jaguar says company won't be just about cars anymore.
Are they trying to pull the Ferrari where they're going to sell a bunch of jackets and hats at massively exorbitant prices to all the fanboys that dream about owning a Jag?
You know, based on where they're going with their concepts, they might not be about cars at all. They might only be a lifestyle brand going forward. So they're trying to change the entire buying process, the feeling of buying, you know, make it more upscale, give people an experience, which, listen, change is necessary. Whatever Jaguar has been doing has not been working, but this might not work even worse. One of the quotes in here says, Glover believes that there's a market for $120,000 or pound electric Jaguar and said that the powertrain is less important to buyers than many other features. He's quoted as saying, we think there's white space, not just in price, but for a brand that's being more disruptive. Side note, that's a term that's way overused. Ugh. People buy cars for their design and interior. Powertrain is about 13th on the list, end quote. I'm sorry, Tesla has entered the chat.
Yeah, like, what? It's, all people talk about with EVs is how powerful they are and how fast they can go 0 to 60.
And how ugly they are, and their interior is terrible, but we don't care because we love the EV powertrain. I don't know where he got his stats, but I feel like Jaguar is headed still in a wrong direction.
Which bums me out because let me tell you, if I was a glutton for punishment, an XF Sport Break would be my next car. Those things are gorgeous, but I do not trust their reliability at all.
Ah, Dan has great luck. He could buy one. It would be just bulletproof. Perfect.
Talk about Dan's going to disrupt that. Yeah, whatever.
Nice try.
It started out here and then just... Oh, God. We haven't done this in a couple of weeks. This is a little rusty.
The week. Prop of the week. I'll save you here. From the Driving Ambition book, this excerpt was highlighted by the Isuzu Registry on Instagram, and it noted, I don't know when I was reading
this. Do you follow
this.
The Isuzu Registry
yes,
on
it's
Instagram?
Awesome. Okay. It's a satire page.
Gotcha.
It's really about supercars with tangential Isuzu content. Yeah, so did you know that McLaren's F1, which is powered by a BMW V12 engine, there is a possibility of it being Isuzu powered.
What engines did Isuzu even make?
I don't know.
Like four cylinders?
But per this book says, quote, the possibility of co-producing some kind of in-house McLaren-badged engine was explored with Judd and also with Isuzu in Japan, who showed great interest, but fatally lacked simple pizzazz.
Huh.
How hilarious would that have been?
You're like, oh, yes, the glorious McLaren F1 powered by Isuzu.
Yes!
And they're just going to glue four of their engines together or something to make this happen? What's going on?
You could, like, a conglomeration of a name, like McSuzu or something.
Wild.
Yep, who knew? Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.